few versions about a story about a man named Jeremiah. He appeared to be homeless and was hanging around on the street outside of a church a lot. One day, he had the courage to enter the church on a Sunday morning. It just so happens that it was the biggest Sunday of the year. There was a video crew setting up to record the service. They were expecting a new guest speaker. And while the congregants were settling in that morning, this man with dirty clothes and a big beard walked around with all of his shopping bags and tried to be friendly and shake a few hands. And a few people said hello, but then he asked for money and no one gave him any money. People were uncomfortable and didn't want to get too close because he probably smelled bad. So he was pretty much ignored. The church was packed, but he found an empty seat near the front and sat down. But then every time that the video crew scanned the room, he would be so visible. I mean, look at him with that scruffy beard and the hat, and, you know, he would stick out like a sore thumb. So one of the senior members of the congregation approached him and politely said, "Perhaps you'd be more comfortable sitting near the back, and I can create more room for your bags there. So please stand and follow me." And he did. Potential crisis averted, image protected, the cameras were rolling, and the service began. The speaker gave a glowing introduction of the new Reverend Stepek, and the congregation welcomed him with a round of applause, and they turned to the side door where he would enter. But no one entered from the side. At the back of the congregation, though, the man with the beard stood up and began walking to the front. And as he did, people glanced over their shoulders and then looked away. Some covered their faces in shame. He had tried to greet them and they had shunned him. His sermon that day was about how the congregation made him feel. Now, these were actually kind people in this congregation. But they were so excited about the new minister, so wrapped up in making the best first impression, that they lost sight of their values and maybe made the worst first impression. Now, the root of that story is more of a fable, and it dates back 50 years or so. And the photo that is attached to that story is actually unrelated. So, sorry, but it's not true. But this is true. Just over a year ago, there was a real pastor in the Chicago area who tried this very social experiment. He sat outside of his own church for a few days, in disguise, and then entered one Sunday, walked to the podium, removed his disguise, and told wonderful stories about all of the love that he had received from the congregation. As he had sat outside, people had brought him food, coffee, water, even gave him money, asked him if he wanted to come inside. They gave him their time, they gave him dignity, and they gave him love. So those are two similar stories with two very different outcomes. If we were to place each story at opposite ends of a spectrum, where would we be as a congregation? Where would we be as individuals? I know that sometimes where I am on that spectrum can depend on what kind of day I'm having. But I also know that our Unitarian principles remind me of the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Justice equity, compassion, acceptance. And if you're new here, Unitarians have a set of guiding principles that are within the first few pages of the hymnal and also on the wall to your right. So just like the people in the first story, I can sometimes lose sight of those principles. I get busy, overwhelmed. Sometimes I have a hard time taking care of myself, let alone taking care of other people. But today, I'm going to remind myself of what is important. And you get to join me. Now we have techie problems. Now's the time that we need to share. And when I say we, I mean me. Many years ago, when I was living in Toronto, I was working for an agency that provided emergency food and shelter for the homeless. It was largely a volunteer-run, underfunded, faith-based program where most of the people were just doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. I was lucky enough to be a paid employee, and I was underqualified to do that, but I did. Now, above the kitchen door of one of the programs, there was a sketch that was very similar to this. So if you can see, there's a lineup of people that we assume are homeless that are waiting for services. And in the middle, there's a figure that looks like it could be Jesus. I always liked this, because the message is basically to treat everyone who enters as if they are the most righteous, the most respected, the most holy deity that you worship. It's a powerful message, especially for a Christian. But what if you don't worship Jesus or don't even believe in Jesus? So I was trying to think of an analogy that would be equally as powerful. And then there was a reporter from the Toronto Star who went undercover utilizing Toronto's homeless services for an entire week, and he wrote about it. And that was the analogy that I needed. Treat every person who walks through the door as if they're a reporter. It stuck with me, and I still use it to this day. I chose to talk about homelessness today because it overlaps with so many other social issues. Those who are chronically homeless can easily become the most excluded people in our society. When someone becomes homeless, they have their stability removed, they lose their privacy, and everything becomes more difficult, from finding employment to finding a drink of water. People without the consistency of a roof over their heads live on the fringes of society, watching all of us busy people in the world while the world pretends not to see you. I can only imagine how humiliating this is. Why is it so easy for our society to ignore homelessness? Is it because we think people are responsible for choices that got them to this point or that keep them there? Is it because we think that their problems are too complex for them to be able to get help? They're just too far gone. While it is true that a high percentage of people who are homeless also struggle with mental illness, substance abuse disorders, and other disabilities, it's not easy to gather statistics on this, but I'll share what I was able to find. There's an estimated 22% of Canadians have a substance use disorder, and then that figure doubles within the homeless population. And somewhere between 25 and 50% of people who are homeless suffer from a mental illness. I know that's a wide range, But another source I found cited it as about one-third of the homeless population. Whereas only about 20% of the general population will experience mental illness at some point throughout their life. So it's true that mental health or substance use disorders can lead to homelessness, but the reverse is also true. On one hand, those who suffer from mental illness or addiction may be less likely to work consistently, and as a result, less likely to make their rent or their mortgage payments. But on the other hand, that stress that people who are homeless experience can trigger or exacerbate mental illness. Substances can become a way of coping. And then the rut of poverty is just a vicious cycle and so difficult to escape and made so much more difficult by the lack of affordable housing. And then it becomes a struggle to meet basic needs like food and hygiene. And in the words of Mother Teresa, the most terrible poverty is loneliness and the feeling of being unloved. So I've got one more story to share. And then some more thoughts. And a lot of questions and not a lot of answers. But that's kind of the way we roll here. A couple of years ago, some of you might recall, I tripped on an uneven sidewalk and I fell hard enough to separate a joint in my shoulder. And I also had some ligament damage. And I had someone give me a ride here on Sunday, and I sat with my arm in a sling. And someone lit a candle and said some nice words for me. And then following the service, so many people wanted to talk to me. And as soon as one person moved on, another stepped in before I could blink. I was rather popular. And it was almost a bit much for my introverted self. But there were so many people interested to know what had happened and how much pain I was in and how my recovery was going, if I needed assistance. Like, wow. We are a community that is caring, kind, compassionate, generous, and loving. But here's the thing about compassion, though. It will weaken under different circumstances. And this is a concept that's bigger than our fellowship. This is society-wide. Our compassion naturally increases based on a few factors. Frequency. It doesn't happen often. Let's face it, if I was falling down and injuring my shoulder every month, then no one would be surprised. They'd be like, oh, there she did it again. You klutz, right? If it's happening frequently or taking a longer time to heal, I'm not necessarily in any less pain, though. I'm probably in more pain. I probably need more help, yet we're less likely to offer help. The second is relatability. That's the it could have happened to me factor. And we can all relate to someone falling on the sidewalk. It could happen to anyone. It's more difficult to have empathy for someone struggling with their mental health if we don't have the same struggle. And it's difficult to relate to someone consumed with addiction unless we've been in those shoes. Now, for some of us, being left alone would sound like a dream, a break from constantly interacting with people at work and at home, and that makes it very difficult to understand the impact of loneliness. It's incredibly hard for most of us to understand what it's like to be homeless. Many of those experiencing homeless were once like you and me. Now, we know from a previous slide that there are higher rates of mental illness and substance use disorders within the homeless population, but there's a higher percentage of those who do not have mental illness than who do, and substance use disorders than who do. I know that some of you are kind of half listening right now, wondering when I'm going to be finished, or thinking about the end of the service, and you're salivating for that cup of coffee that's brewing in the kitchen, or you're itching to get outside for a cigarette. And so many of us have these vices that are socially acceptable, and we can use that to help us relate to those who suffer from alcoholism or substance addiction. The point that I really want to stress is that we are so much more alike than we are unlike. The more that we can try to relate to one another, the more natural it will be to love one another. We are so much more the same than we are different. As most of you know, about a month ago, we experienced our second burglary in a relatively short time here at Unitarian House. And as part of my own process in moving beyond that, I wrote a little letter pretending it was for the person who broke in. While I was writing that letter, I was trying to relate to this person, what their life must have been like to get to this point of desperation. We are more alike than we are unalike. We both started out as a cluster of cells, completely indistinguishable from one another. And so many other factors influenced us from that point forward. If your life circumstances were different, you could be me, and if my life circumstances were different, I could be you. That was the gist of the little letter that I wrote, and then I shared that letter with our board of directors and gave them permission to use it on our website and Facebook page. And from there, it kind of went viral. The letter concluded with the words, "If circumstances were different, perhaps you would be visiting us on a Sunday morning. Maybe someday that will happen, and we'll have the coffee on." It was an invitation for the person to come on a Sunday morning, no pressure, just come for a cup of coffee. Bring your wounded heart and come for love. But what if that person did come? Or what if they came with a group of people? What if they joined us on Sunday and were clearly not doing well? Are we equipped to deal with this? And then I realized this kind of love one another concept is very popular in theory. I mean, Facebook has told us that we are very popular for thinking this way. But in actuality, I don't know what we'd do. It might be pretty stressful if we wound up with many marginalized people joining us on Sunday. How difficult would it be for them to even sit through a service if your basic needs are not being met? Would we be as popular with the general population as we were on Facebook? Wouldn't it start to hurt our attendance of our regulars? Or would an innocent newcomer be startled by this experience and unlikely to return? Maybe. So to help answer this question, I'm going to turn to Amy. She's not here today, but many of you know Amy. She's a member of our congregation and owns a couple of local restaurants. And unlike many businesses, their washrooms are not just for customers. Anyone can walk in off the street and use their washroom, have a drink of water, a cup of coffee, and you may find someone sitting on the sidewalk outside of the restaurant collecting change. Well, one would think that this would hurt the business, right? But the growing season and Rebel Salad here in our community are thriving. So maybe this tells us that if your business is providing a great good or service that is superb, that people really want, the customers will be there regardless, and the business will not be hurt by providing dignity to everyone equally. There's a lot of research about substance use disorders out there. And a theory that is becoming more and more recognized is that addiction isn't just about being hooked on an addictive substance. It's also about trauma, specifically childhood trauma, and a lack of meaningful connections. Some would go so far as to say that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety. The opposite of addiction is human connection. Human connection. Well, that sounds like a way that congregations like ours can help. A study conducted by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health indicated that if we had cancer, 78% of us would be likely to let others know. But if we had mental illness, only about 50% of us would tell someone. People who struggle with mental illness are so prone to isolating and suffering in silence, yet that is such a detrimental thing, to suffer in silence. Know what plays a key role in helping someone recover from mental illness? Friendships. Well, that sounds like a way that congregations like ours can help. Loneliness, as was mentioned earlier, is a huge epidemic affecting everyone from children to seniors. Doesn't that sound like a way congregations like ours can help? We're a small congregation, but we have a really big heart. We have a little care committee of volunteers who do great work providing some emotional support and assistance when someone is hospitalized, ill, injured, or bereaved. And these are all things that are relatable and rare. Could we do more? Should we do more? I don't know. How soon would we exhaust ourselves? If we give so much of ourselves, we need to replenish that from somewhere, otherwise we wind up empty. This is also a way that congregation like ours can help. We are a fueling station. We can fuel each other up with positive energy, and we can do it again and again. Now, religious communities like ours are dwindling. Churches are no longer the cornerstone of the community. Our congregation has been around for 61 years, and it's had its period of birth and growth. And I don't know how many years our community here at Lakehead Unitarian has left, but I do know that we can make those years count. This morning, I've talked a lot about people who are often excluded from our society, but these people aren't just outside of our doors. There are those of us who regularly attend on Sundays who are hurting, who are in pain, who are depressed, fighting the odds, trying to make meaningful and connections and maintain those connections, trying to avoid relapse. Their pain might not be as visible as someone with their arm in a sling, but it's no less intense. Every week, when the service is done, and I've seen it, you probably see it too, we have our social time, and I know that some of us have a little mental list of all the people we want to connect with. So here's a challenge. Add someone new to the top of your list. Reach out to someone who might be suffering. Reach out to someone new. Share some love. It could be the most important thing that you do all week. And then when we go out into the world, take a minute and share that love with those who need it most.